And this will be our best step foot, footstep for... Did I mess up?
Yeah. Easy for him to say. Mr. Not the Speaker. Oh, boy.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling there's something right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me. Jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Ah, yeah, stuck in the middle with you right here. At the Bradcast. You got it in the right place. The Bradcast. As heard on KPFK 90.7 in Los Angeles, coast to coast and around the globe on kpfk.org, WLRI 93 FM in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and Radio Sputnik 5 days a week, usually hosted by kind of a nice guy, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. But today, you got me, Nicole Sandler, of RadioOrNot.com, and boy, do we have a busy show for you today. You know, all indications were that Kevin McCarthy was going to be the next Speaker of the House, but you know what they say, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Oh boy, we'll give you the whole soap opera-like saga, and Congressman Alan Grayson, the guy who filed an ethics complaint against Kevin McCarthy, will weigh in today as well on this edition of the Bradcast. But I want to start with Kevin McCarthy, the man who would be Speaker, but he's not. But let's not get ahead of ourselves, shall we? As I mentioned at the beginning, I'm Nicole Sandler, in for Brad Friedman. And one thing you may not know about me, unless you listen to my show at RadioOrNot.com, that is, I have a wicked case of insomnia. And so I find myself out in the living room, oftentimes in the wee hours of the morning, flipping around the TV channels. And that's what happened. And I happened to stumble upon Rachel Maddow, kind of like smirking in a snarky sort of way. And, well, I backed it up because I wanted to hear what she was going on about, because she was saying things that seemed not to make any sense. And here's the thing. They didn't. Listen for yourself.
Sometimes truth comes out in other manners.
Okay.
Sometimes truth comes out in other manners.
In other manners.
In other manners.
It wasn't what I, in my mind, was saying out there.
Okay.
It wasn't what I, in my mind, was saying out there.
It wasn't what I, in my mind. And believe me now, I do not want to make that harm, Benghazi committee. I do not want to make that harm.
Harm?
This has been a bit of a setback.
It's been a setback, yes, because I do not want to make that harm Benghazi committee in any way.
What?
I do not want to make that harm Benghazi committee.
Yeah,
in
got
any
it.
Way.
Don't know what it means.
Kevin McCarthy is not getting better. When he gave his big foreign policy speech the first business day after John Boehner stepped down as speaker, the kind-hearted among us wondered if maybe he spoke so incoherently in that speech just because it was that first day. You know, just because he was nervous. First
maybe.
Day jitters, maybe.
Got it. Right.
You don't have the same as difficult decision, but this White House is managing the decline and putting us in tough decisions for the future.
Oh, Petraeus, come on now.
And Crocker had an effective politically strategy to match the military strategy, the simple promise.
What? Politically strategy?
To all of our heroes, to the need when they need it most.
Huh?
The president would allow the ban on Iranian oil exports to be lifted and also stand by a Russia blackmails an entire continent, all the while keeping the place of the ban on America.
What is he saying? Are you getting this? All right, we'll keep going.
In the past few years alone, I have visited Poland, Hungary? Estonia.
What?
We're not editing that stuff. That's just like, that was the first day back at work after John Boehner resigned. And John Boehner resigning put Kevin McCarthy in line to be the next Speaker of the House. But it turns out we now know those were not first day jitters. That is just kind of the way he tries to talk. That's
Lovely.
The way he is all the time. We now know because after that first gobbledygook nonsense, Mad Libs, bad lip reading translated back into English from some other language, foreign policy speech, in the days after that disaster, he kept on keeping on. I mean, it was the days after that when he said totally unprompted on the Fox News channel that Republicans had created the Benghazi committee to bring down Hillary Clinton's poll numbers. After defending that for a few days, today, Mr. McCarthy finally admitted that he messed that up. You know, but even when he was still defending it, he still really, truly has continued to have a very hard time talking in a way that makes sense. Despite his verbal trouble, House Republicans do seem set to go ahead tomorrow with nominating Kevin McCarthy to be the new speaker.
Put him third
in line to the presidency after Vice President Biden. And
Ouch.
Even today, on the precipice of that achievement, as he is more and more frequently now being asked about the really big issues of the day and America's role in the world, still today, the man cannot speak in a way that consistently makes sense.
Oh, no.
This is Kevin McCarthy asking today, why wouldn't the president treat America the same as he's treat Iran?
But as we recently discussed, this president put forward an Iran agreement. Why wouldn't the president treat America the same as he's treat Iran?
What?
The same as he's treat Iran. Or trick or treat Iran the same as he's treat. Speaker to be Kevin McCarthy.
Or not.
What about world leaders? Mr. McCarthy, world leaders.
Yeah.
What do they use energy to put influence?
No.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
When you think about what's going on in the world and you look at world leaders, they use energy to put influence almost like a military resource.
They use energy to put influence almost like a military resource. Okay?
No, not okay. So I watched that and I thought, okay, I'm still half asleep. This is not making any sense. So I'm going to go elsewhere. So I flipped around the DVR and I come upon Stephen Colbert, who I adore. And I thought, okay, this is just what I need. After that incoherence, something that makes sense. Take it away, Stephen Colbert.
McCarthy's got plenty of support in Congress, so he's got the House part down. But apparently, he's still working on the Speaker.
They'd have a minority group within one party to say you cannot have a debate. You cannot have a vote on the bill. It isn't too important. And today is the day that we should really look to and the pressure mount to actually let the people have a say.
What?
Strong English-like words. Today is in too important the day that should really look to and the pressure mount.
Yeah.
If not, who?
Who?
Now, I'm not sure what any of that means,
Okay. Not alone.
I'm sure it means just as much as this foreign policy speech he gave last week.
We must engage this war of radical Islam if our life depended on it. Because it does. We don't have the same as difficult decision, but this White House is managing the decline and putting us in tough decisions.
He did not.
In the past few years alone, I have visited Poland, Hungary, Estonia, Russia, and Georgia.
Yikes.
Wow, that guy is well-traveled. Hopefully, his experience in Hungary will allow him to finally broker a peace treaty with Narnia.
There's that.
Now, some people...
Okay. Got, understood that. That's about it. Thank you, Colbert.
Now, some people say McCarthy's trouble in expressing his vision of leadership or anything else makes him disqualified to be Speaker of the House. But to them, I say, my fellow Americans, long before times have we faced great challenges of this nation, but America is anything if not a land from opportunity. Of the Speaker and the House, Kevin McCarthy wants to rise that opportunity and let every mouth speak as one.
Yeah.
It's the circle of life, and it moves us all. Because without a brave leadership, America won't be left behind. I believe it was Ronald Reagan who said, Thomas Jefferson. And those are words are still are true today.
Yeah.
Thank you. May God thank America, and hello.
Stephen Colbert, everyone. Making sense of Kevin McCarthy as only Stephen Colbert can. So, under that backdrop, we were all excited, got the popcorn popped, ready for the first round of voting in the House of Representatives to make Kevin McCarthy the new Speaker of the House. And then this happened.
We've been going through this campaign, talking to a lot of members, but the one thing I've always said to earn this majority... We're servants. We should put this conference first.
Okay.
And I think there's something to be said for us to unite. We probably need a fresh face.
Okay.
I'll stay on as majority leader.
Huh?
But the one thing I found in talking to everybody If we are going to unite and be strong, we need a new face to help do that. So nothing more than that. I feel good about the decision. I feel great to have my family here, my colleagues. I think we're only going to be stronger. We fought hard to win this majority and turn this country around. And this will be our best step foot, footstep for...
Easy for you to say.
You said at 8 a.m. that you were going to run for the speakership. Why change it at noon? What happened those 4 hours?
You know, we had our conference, and there's calls into the district. I don't want making voting for speaker a tough one. I don't want to go to the floor and win with 220 votes. I think the best thing for our party right now is that you have 247 votes on the floor. If we are going to be strong, we got to be 100% united. And I think, you know what? Let's put the conference first, because that's what we're about to do. Look, we have been talking. I've been talking with a number of members. We've been thinking about this throughout the week, trying to see if we can get there. I just think it's best we have a new face.
Mr. McCarthy, how much did your comments about Benghazi last week play into your decision to step aside today?
Well, that wasn't helpful.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, I could have said it much better. But this...
You think?
Benghazi committee was only created for one purpose, to find the truth on behalf of the families for the 4 dead Americans. I should not be a distraction from that, and that's part of the decision as well.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and so there you have it. Kevin McCarthy, in a, you know, something that would put a soap opera to shame, says, you know, on second thought, maybe I don't want to be Speaker of the House after all. Well, I guess we will, wait and find out why, if there's anything more. Although, I noticed a correlation. Something happened. Congressman Alan Grayson, also a candidate for the U.S. Senate from my state of Florida, actually filed an ethics complaint against Kevin McCarthy and Trey Gowdy for wasting taxpayer money on what amounts to a witch hunt. Kevin McCarthy says, maybe I don't want to be speaker after all. Interesting stuff, right? So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side with Congressman Alan Grayson himself and see if he wants to take the blame or the thanks, whichever the case may be. So stick around. More of the broadcast is coming up with me, your faithful guest host, Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, and Congressman Alan Grayson next. Don't speak. Well, we've already determined in the first segment that would-be Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, has a little trouble along those lines, you know, when it comes to speaking. So he said, well, regarding my quest for Speaker, never mind. So I was trying to put two and two together. By the way, I'm Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, in for Brad Friedman on the broadcast. I was thinking, so what happened to make Kevin McCarthy change his mind? Well, it could be we made fun of the fact that he can't put three words together to make a sentence, but it's got to be something more than that. So, with that in mind, joining us on the line now is Congressman Alan Grayson, who filed an ethics complaint against Kevin McCarthy and Trey Gowdy, and what was supposed to be an almost routine vote propelling Kevin McCarthy to the speakership seems to have all come unraveled. So, Congressman Grayson, is this your doing?
Quite possibly. Yeah. You know, McCarthy just spoke about this, and he said that one of the factors he was asked, why did you do this? What's the reason? It has something to do with your statement about Benghazi. And he said basically yes. He came as close to yes as Republicans in Washington, D.C. ever do. What he said was, well, that didn't help. So I think that by turning up the heat on him by filing an ethics complaint regarding his confession that he had wasted $4.5 million of taxpayer funds on a witch hunt called the Benghazi Committee, actually did some good.
Yeah, and you know what's blowing my mind is hearing the backtracking and Trey Gowdy, who reminds me of the bad kid from Harry Potter, you know, who was in Slytherin. I don't know if you read the Harry Potter books, but Trey Gowdy, he's been saying, well, he apologized. What more do you want? Well, you know, maybe an admission that he spoke the truth. And for speaking the truth, he's now incurred the wrath of his caucus. They don't want him there because he admitted that they went on a witch hunt. And the reason for this select committee was to help, I guess, further derail her presidential candidacy. So it seems like everyone else is trying to do damage control. But so I obviously wasn't there. I was wrapping up my show when I saw all hell break loose on Twitter. So were you in the chamber? I mean, how did this all unfold?
Oh, I was in my office, and it is a momentous event, no question about it. Anybody who works on Capitol Hill regards this as one of the most important news events that could actually happen for us, and also indirectly for the country. But it's a very simple matter. He told the truth, and it set us free of him.
Mm-hmm.
The truth did set us free. It set us free of him and the prospect that he would be Speaker of the House and third in line for the presidency.
That's amazing. So now there is no, you look at the names that are in contention. Steve Scalise, really? And even worse, Daniel Webster. I read on somebody tweeted out Daniel Webster now seems to be like the leading contender. Daniel Webster, of course, from our state of Florida.
Well, it's not going to happen.
No.
I mean, I'm not going to strike that level of fear into your listeners by pretending that Daniel Webster has any serious chance of becoming the Speaker of the House. I'm not going to wave that boogeyman in front of people.
Well,
that's
here,
not going to happen.
The New York Times says, as shocked members left the room, there was a sense of total disarray with no clear path forward and no set date for a new vote. A group of about 40 hardline House conservatives announced Wednesday night that they would support Representative Daniel Webster of Florida, making it unclear whether Mr. McCarthy could assemble the 218 votes he needs. And we know where that is now. So everything's in disarray now. Does this mean we get, John Boehner to kick around a little longer?
I don't think so. It's difficult to discern how this ends unless Paul Ryan decides that he'd like the job after all.
Which today
there
he
is
said
a certain
he...
sense that Paul Ryan is acceptable to most, if not all, of the different factions in the Republican caucus. And if he said he's not interested in the job, but if he changed his mind and said that he would take the job, then he might very well be able to get to 218.
Congressman Alan Grayson, things could get really scary on Halloween, even scarier than they are normally, right? Because Boehner is apparently
on Halloween all month long,
leaving October 31st, replacement or not. But the thing that won't go away, so McCarthy took himself out of the running, shocking everyone. But the thing is, your ethics complaint, it's still going. I mean, just because...
Well, the problem's still there. They can't undo the fact that they wasted $4.5 million of taxpayer money on a politically motivated anti-Hillary witch hunt. They can't undo that. They can't undo the fact that the committee still exists, and it was stalled all the way from January until now, specifically for the purpose of having Hillary's testimony coincide closely with the first Democratic debate. They can't undo the fact that these things violate House regulations, the ethics manual, and so on. This was an effort to interfere in the Democratic presidential primary misusing public funds.
Right.
And
right.
That was the essence of what I filed. McCarthy has withdrawn his candidacy.
Isn't that amazing? Shockwaves are rippling everywhere. And the Republican Party is probably the only thing more dysfunctional than the Democratic Party today. It seems like everything in D.C. is a little awry. I'm wondering, Congressman Grayson, I know like among my listeners, the people that I talk with, a lot of applause and gratitude for you filing this ethics complaint.
Well, because, you know, I'll tell you honestly that there are and probably will be ways for them to lash back at me.
Oh, I'm
very
sure.
Proud of the fact that in the last 2 years, 15 Grayson bills were passed by the House, passed by the Senate, and signed into law by the President. And let me put it this way. The odds of that may have changed in the past day or so since that ethics complaint was filed. They look for ways to lash back at people. Even within their own caucus, they stripped many of their members of their committee assignments.
Right.
If they didn't like the way that they were behaving. And this is why it fell to me to file such a thing when we have so many members of Congress here who are Democrats who could have done the same thing, but chose not to, possibly because they were concerned about repercussions. I mean, there's roughly 180 of us, and it's still only one complaint was filed, and that was by me.
Right, and I had raised this question, I don't think with you, because it's been a couple of weeks since we've spoken, but with someone, and I asked, is anybody going to step up and file an ethics complaint? And sure enough, you know, it was one of the first things I saw. It's like, damn, yes. You know, this is why we love you, Congressman Alan Grayson, because you're not afraid of that. And I understand that, is it Steny Hoyer was not very happy with you, that some in leadership let it be known that they were not happy you did this?
No, I don't think that that's true.
No?
I'm not aware of everything that everybody says,
right.
But I don't recall Steny saying that. I have had conversations with Republicans who explained to me that they were very happy with
really?
Me. Yes, but so be it. And you know, that's the way it goes. Hopefully we'll still have our amendments and our bills considered on the merits, and hopefully we can continue to be as productive as I've been. I passed more amendments in the past 2 years than any other member of Congress, Democratic or Republican. More Grayson bills are now the law of the land than any other member of Congress, Democratic or Republican, in the past 2 years. 15 Grayson bills, 31 amendments, and I'd like to be able to continue to do that, but I also want to make sure that we speak truth to power and hold those in power accountable, particularly when we see them trying to grow to interfere grossly in our internal party processes by slinging mud at one of our candidates. I think this isn't a question of whether you're for or against Hillary. This is a question of whether you're for or against democracy.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I let it be known, I'm not a Hillary supporter. I'm actually in Bernie Sanders' camp. But this, you know, it's like I get my mama bear hackles up. You know, don't play dirty politics. It's ugly. And, you know, McCarthy, this is the right outcome, I think.
Do you happen to know how many congressional investigations there were of Benghazi before the Benghazi Commission?
I think it was something like five or six, weren't they? And they all came back showing nothing, no evidence.
Right. There were nine.
Nothing.
Nine.
Wow.
And if you look at the last 27 news releases that were issued by the Benghazi Committee, 22 of the 27 were about Hillary Clinton.
Wow.
So it's really it's not the Benghazi committee, it's the committee to generate anti-Hillary agitprop.
And he's right. It worked because this relentless, going on about her, the emails, which of course came out of the Benghazi thing, it just wears people down. You know, with me, I go numb to it. I turn a blind eye. It's like they're throwing so much crap against the wall just to see what sticks. So I don't believe any of it. But most people don't pay attention the way we do. And so it has had an effect. And it's, you know, you called him out on it. So, you know, good on you. And I'm hoping, I know, look, you do what you believe is in the best interest of your constituents and of the American people. Another reason why I'm a big supporter of yours. But, it comes to a point where what's right is right. You're right. This is not about Hillary Clinton. This is about our political system getting so ugly. And again, it's one of the reasons I like Bernie Sanders, because he says, I'm going to talk about the merits. I'm going to talk about what I believe in and what I'm running on. And you can ask the other candidates about what they think, what they feel. It shouldn't be about attacking the other guy. It should be about what you can do for the American people.
Well, for sure. And in particular, it shouldn't be about unfair and unwarranted attacks on the other guy or gal or secretary or senator, as the case may be. I've read every single classified document about Benghazi, the reports, the memos, the emails, the diplomatic cables. I've read them all. She did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
She did nothing wrong.
That's what I...
And it's appalling to see that she gets this terrible, how shall I put this, show trial, Stalin-esque show trial, when in fact she didn't do anything wrong. I'm all in favor of holding people accountable when they do something wrong. I don't mind it when it's directed against me. But the fact is that she didn't do anything wrong, and all this is just that much more unfair.
And so it goes. The Benghazi committee will continue. I believe Secretary Clinton is set to testify in the next couple of weeks, and it's going to keep going. And now they're going to impanel a new special select committee on Planned Parenthood. I'm hoping the American people can see through the nonsense that they're pulling here, because instead of talking about the issues, they keep putting up these smoke screens. And
I mean, it's exactly the way Hillary Clinton's famous husband once described it. It's the politics of personal destruction. It's been going on since Gingrich took out Jim Wright here in this body, in the House of Representatives. It was probably perfected in the attack on Acorn that destroyed Acorn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And now they're wielding the same illegal and unethical means to torpedo Hillary's campaign and to kill Planned Parenthood.
You know, this is their M.O. And you, Congressman Grayson, you interrupted them. You said, no more business as usual.
Put it back on them.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. And good. Let me ask you one last question while I've got you, because you and I have spoken many times over the last few years about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You were one of the loudest voices in opposition to it. You are one of the first people who actually cut through all the crap to be able to read it, even though you had to be in a, you know, hermetically sealed room with no staffers, no pencil, no telephone, no anything else, but just read it. Now that they've come to an agreement and Hillary Clinton has said she's against it, what are your thoughts going forward? Do we still have a chance of derailing this piece of crap?
Well, we had 28 Democrats who voted for fast track to re-rail it and rail it. So to unrail it, it's going to take some real pressure on those 28 Democrats to act in a more responsible manner. I don't know if Hillary's going to start to make calls or not, but I think that if she did, that conceivably might have to have some kind of impact. I think some of these 28 probably have already endorsed her. But I don't know if that's going to happen or not. It's one thing to say you're for or against something, and it's another thing to work for
exactly.
or against. I've been working against this now for years and working hard against it. Our video at tradetreachery.com had over 1 million views on Facebook alone.
Wow.
And that was one way that we worked against it. But I've been on the whip team against these unconstitutional trade giveaways now for years. And I'm going to continue to do that. If Hillary weighs in at that level, then I think we have some chance of preventing it. But I think the more likely course of is that it'll become an issue in the Republican presidential debates. And I think if all of the leading Republican candidates come out against it, pretty clear that Trump's likely to do that.
Yep.
If all of them come out against it, it becomes that much harder for them to scrape together the roughly 200 votes that they would need among the Republicans out of the 240-plus Republicans that there are to get this through the House. That's those numbers start to look bad when they lose any significant number of Republicans because it squeaked by. It was so close that if four members had switched their votes last time on fast track, we would have stopped it. And we did stop it, but it came back from the dead 2 days later.
Right. Oh, boy. I can't even imagine the feeling over there right now. I would imagine the halls of Congress are buzzing right now with nobody quite sure of what happens next. This is uncharted territory, isn't it?
Well, the lunatics have taken over the asylum.
What else is new? You know, I was floating with somebody our choices on Twitter for speaker. Now, I know Congressman Grayson, as the most effective member of Congress, you work with your colleagues across the aisle, even when sometimes you disagree with them vehemently on some issues. I know I think it was Joshua Holland and I both agreed we'd love to see a speaker, Louis Gohmert. And when I've raised his name to you sort of in a mocking way, you've said, I actually like Gohmert. We've worked together on bills, you see, because you know how to do that.
Well, I mean, that's right. I want to get to yes, even though I have a fundamentally different view of the world than many of them do, and I have different priorities. But I want to do good things. I want to advance my progressive agenda, And the way that we do that is we either shame them into going along with it, they just can't figure out a decent way to say no, or alternatively, we find some kind of common ground. To us, it might be an environmental bill. To some of them, it might be a states' rights bill, depending upon how I draft it. And then there's other things we do as well in order to get things done. But I will tell you that whoever is in charge, we're likely to continue to get things done. Slate Magazine called me the most effective member of Congress.
Yep.
Business Insider said I was the most productive member of Congress. Time Magazine said I was a standout member in a do-nothing Congress. We get things done. We'll continue to find a way to win.
I have no doubt of that. Looking forward to seeing you down here in South Florida. I know we're not going to talk campaign stuff because this is official business. Alan Grayson, find him at, senatorwithguts.com. Congressman Alan Grayson, you're the best. And can't wait to see you down here in Broward County soon.
Thank you. I look forward to that, too.
All right. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Congressman Alan Grayson, hopefully soon to be Senator Alan Grayson. We'll talk more about that on another day. Because we've got to take a break. But when we come back, a really serious story that I'm not quite sure how to wrap my brain around. The bombing, our bombing, of a Doctors Without Borders hospital in Afghanistan. Really? Marcy Wheeler of EmptyWheel.net will join us to try to figure it all out. I'm Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, in for Brad Friedman on the Bradcast. The wonderful music of Michael Fronte and Spearhead. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. I'm Nicole Sandler, filling in for Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen on this edition of The Bradcast. Happy to be with you, though I'm not really happy about this next story, but it's one we need to talk about. And when I tried to figure out who was the best person to help me figure it out, couldn't think of anyone other than Marcy Wheeler. Joining us on the line now is Marcy Wheeler from EmptyWheel.net, at EmptyWheel on Twitter. Of course, always the first person I think of whenever there's something that just goes beyond comprehension when it comes to military, intelligence. I know those two don't necessarily go together. And sure enough, I go to EmptyWheel.net to find out what the hell went on with this bombing of the Doctors Without Borders hospital in Afghanistan. And Marcy Wheeler, as expected, you're all over this. So I guess we should start with when the news first broke Monday morning, because the story we were told then, if I'm reading correctly, is pretty different from the story we're getting now, 5 days later?
Sort of. It actually happened Saturday.
Okay.
And Sunday, Ash Carter was traveling with journalists, and he said, our special forces on the ground called in airstrikes, meaning they were under attack, and their means of dealing with it was to call in an airstrike, and it just happened to hit the hospital. I mean, actually, the first thing that DOD said was, sure, something hit the hospital at the same time as we were doing a bombing run, but we don't know if that's what happened. And then there was the Ash Carter statement. And then John Campbell, who's the general for ISAF, for Afghanistan, was already scheduled to come to D.C. to basically help McCain make the case for a continued troop presence in Afghanistan. And that's really important to remember, is that DOD wants to keep troops there. McCain wants to keep troops there. Obama would like to be able to claim he ended the war, but he also doesn't want chaos to break out. And so that's an underlying tension in the background. And Campbell claimed, I'm telling you something different than what I told you, what Carter and others told you, which is that our special forces weren't under attack. Rather, it was the Afghans who called in the airstrikes, which ended up hitting the hospital. And that was not that different a story, because even on Monday morning, and this is something that almost nobody reported, but even Monday morning, Campbell was like, when pressed, he said, yes, the Afghans asked the special forces in close proximity to the hospital to call in the airstrikes. And then when asked, were our special forces fighting with the Afghans who said they needed an airstrike, he said, oh, that'll all come out in the investigation. So in other words, DOD actually has not said thus far that the special forces who called in the airstrikes at the behest of the Afghans, they haven't said that they were not fighting, that they were not co-present with the Afghans who were there. And that's sort of key, because if they were co-present, they should have known, you know, that they weren't hitting a target.
Right.
Two really important background pieces too that again have been largely lost is that on Thursday or Friday, DOD basically admitted that our special forces on the ground had exchanged fire with Taliban in Kunduz. So even though rules of engagement, even though our role there is supposed to be, you'll hear TAA, it's supposed to be train, advise, and assist.
Mm-hmm.
The day before this happened, DOD admitted that they were doing more than train and assist. They were exchanging fire. And by the time the MSF strike was the 12th strike last week in Kunduz, called in by special forces, there were 11 more, right? So most of them were south of the hospital is in Kunduz. A lot of them were on the airport south of, on the outskirts of the city. I'm not sure it's south, actually. But anyway, but the point is that there was already all this fighting going on with our special forces fighting hand in hand with the Afghan special forces. And so the distinction of whether the Afghans asked us to call in the strike or whether the special forces did is minor unless you're worried about not extending beyond the role you're supposed to be playing. So mm-hmm. In other words, DOD doesn't want to get caught having special forces actually fighting. So they have an incentive to say that these guys were not fighting. Uh-huh. DOD also, again, because of the background I told you, that they want to be able to keep their forces there. And then the other thing is that the Afghans, so my guess is two things happened, is the Afghans called in the strikes, and we can talk about why they might do that. But then special forces, they have a vetting process that is supposed to prevent this kind of catastrophe from happening, and it didn't happen. And that, thus far, Campbell has admitted that didn't happen. Now, again, they have, DOD would be less guilty. They would not be guilty of war crimes if their vetting process screwed up. And if everyone got distracted from the reason the Afghans called in the strike in the first place, and that would be kind of a preferable second position for them to special forces were on the ground and called in an airstrike on a hospital, because then our country would be guilty of war.
Right. But regardless, we're complicit at the very least, because the vetting process, for lack of the proper term, obviously didn't happen. There was they didn't go through the proper steps to make sure that what are the criteria for this type of bombing raid is that there's evidence of a combat situation where lives are in danger, right? And they didn't go through any of the process to make sure that was indeed the case,
right? And they didn't, There have been people who know a whole lot more about military tactics than me saying, look, this kind of airplane doesn't just fly on a coordinate. It flies with visual confirmation with people on the ground. Yeah. And so it's a major screw up. I mean, it is a major screw up. But again, for a variety of background political reasons, both the U.S. and the Afghans would prefer to have it be an undiscussed question of why the Afghans called in the strike, and then the U.S. having screwed up the vetting, then the Americans being on the ground and calling in the strike themselves, or agreeing with people that they were fighting with. And I don't know whether they were with them or not. I know that, if you look at the questions DOD doesn't want to answer, that's one of them. Another one is what were the rules of engagement? The rules of engagement should be about this train and assist mission, and if they weren't, then again, that raises questions about whether DOD is using troops in a way that the president hasn't approved.
Right. And then the next question comes from, where do we go from here? I guess, the DOD and the Obama administration and probably, I guess, the Afghans as well would like, to, as you mentioned, just to handle this internally. We'll investigate it ourselves. Meanwhile, Borders, which is actually MSF, and my French is not good, Medicine Sans Frontières.
That'll work.
Okay. They want to have the U.S. brought up on charges of war crimes. Now, look, I think this is inexcusable. And I guess if we find out that U.S. forces dropped these bombs without going through the proper channels to make sure that this was indeed what we should be doing, then they are guilty of that. But what I don't understand is if there's even a consideration of this being brought up to the level of war crimes, what about Bush, Cheney and company for the war crimes of getting us into these damn wars in the first place? I mean, this is bad. And there are 22 people killed, and it's just horrific when you hear that many of the victims were burned alive in their hospital beds. It's sickening. But how many thousands or hundreds of thousands of lives were lost due to our first invasion of Iraq? I that's a war crime.
But MSF is trying to make a more narrow point.
Yes.
I mean, they're trying to do two things. And I did a post the other day describing what happened when Campbell testified before McCain's committee. And Jean Shaheen, to her credit, said, well, you don't mind if we do an investigation? And Campbell kind of danced. And he said, well, here's how good our investigation is. And she said, well, you know, if I understand correctly, then you don't object. And he didn't say yes. He instead said, well, let me check with my boss, and here's how good our investigation is. But then Dan Sullivan, the senator from Alaska, then came in and, he started saying, do you think it would be fair and balanced if the UN conducted an investigation, which was clearly on something that was accidental, the hospital bombing, when they don't investigate deliberate Taliban killings of civilians? Do you think it would be viewed as fair or balanced, as something the command needs or would welcome? Right. And it was a crazy comment. It was factually incorrect because, in fact, the UN investigates Taliban war crimes all the time. But it was also very clear that both DOD and Sullivan was rolled out to push back against Shaheen's comment. Nobody wants an independent investigation, which suggests there's something there. And MSF, when they reiterate their call for an investigation, they do so not just because they're pissed off and their colleagues were killed, but also because and this goes to why it is plausible the Afghans targeted this hospital intentionally, which is that in July, the Afghan Special Forces raided this precise hospital.
Right.
And there is at least rumor out there that the Afghans don't like this hospital because it treats everybody, which is what hospitals are supposed to do.
Of course.
If that's at all, and again, the fact that the Afghan Special Forces raided this hospital in July makes it pretty clear they know where the hospital is because they were there raiding it in July. Mm-hmm. And their immediate comments after the attack on Saturday were, oh, well, there were Taliban there, they were fighting. You know, they immediately made this argument that MSF was in bed with the Taliban when what MSF wants to defend is the right for truly neutral parties in war zones, and they need that to be sacrosanct because they do this kind of work all over the world and not just when the U.S. is one of the fighting parties. And if it is possible for, you know, and I'm not saying I think the Afghan purposes for calling in the strike need to be the focus of the journalism at this point, and then we can talk about the vetting processes later. But if that's in fact what happened, then it really is an important principle, because otherwise there's no neutrality in war left. If something of this magnitude can be allowed to happen, then you just don't have a Red Cross. And by the way, the Red Cross had to pull out of Yemen because of Saudi bombing, so we're at a point where all of these wars, and it's obviously not just us. The Russians bomb civilians all the time.
It's happening in Syria right now. We don't know what's going on over there exactly.
Right. The Houthi have targeted plenty of civilians. Mm-hmm. But if there is no protection for these neutral parties in war zones, then it would become unworkable for them to remain on site. And MSF did pull out of Kunduz, which means you've got, you know, in a place you've got, they put up, and sure, you know, they're working the press as well, but they put up video from the clinic going back to when it opened in 2011, you know, and it's kids going in there with broken bones. And this is what you're taking away, is that these people who live in a difficult part of the world have a medical service that, a free medical service that just got removed because they got bombed.
By us. And we're supposed to be better than that. And that's the whole thing. And I'm not saying we are. Look, we're guilty of our fair share of, I think, war crimes over the last decade or two. But the bombing of a hospital, I find it inconceivable. And, you know, also, I find it curious that it's really getting so little media coverage, maybe because there's no way to spin it as positive, which seems to be, you know, depending on the so-called news outlet, spin is their number one priority as opposed to actually, you know, journalism. That's why we go to emptywheel.net and hopefully shows like the Bradcast and my show at radioornot.com. So Marcy Wheeler, I mean, MSF, Doctors Without Borders, is pushing for, we keep hearing, war crimes investigation. But in your articles, you take care to call them independent, that they're reiterating their call for an independent investigation. Is there anything between, like, some independent world investigation on the world stage and war crimes? Or does this meet, is this war crime?
Well, I don't know.
We don't know yet, right.
You know, it is quite possible there was active fighting going on, and it is quite possible that people panicked. And I think it's fairly clear that the Americans didn't vet the strike.
Mm-hmm.
And Campbell, speaking anonymously, even though he promises a transparent process, has kind of admitted that our vetting process, but that's a vetting process. We make those kinds of mistakes. We do a reasonably good job of keeping them down, but we make those mistakes with tragic consequences. The real underlying issue is why the strikes got called in the first place. And depending on that reason, that's when you get into whether or not it's a war crime, depending on what they knew about the hospital, about why they called it in, about whether there was any reason to believe that there was active fighting from the hospital, and so on and so forth. MSF, I'm sure, is calling for an independent investigation for more than just that's the only way that they can certify whether or not it's a war crime. Even Obama, you know, Tuesday, the White House press secretary was asked, well, is Obama going to apologize? And he said, well, we're going to wait until we get all the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wednesday morning, President Obama called, and the press description of what happened was he called to apologize. But if you look at the readout that, you know, the White House provides a summary of these conversations, and if you look at the readout of that conversation, he called to apologize, sure, but he also called to make the same case that General Campbell tried to make, which was, look at how great and independent our investigation is. And MSF came out right after that was released and said, no,
I don't want
an independent investigation.
Them.
So, you know, he called to try and convince them to back off their claims for their demand for an independent investigation, and they're not playing. And so, you know, they clearly believe that there is a reason a U.S., an Afghan, a NATO investigation will not be adequate. And they may have good reason to believe, you know, they may have good reason to know that. There are also, I mean, no need to get into it, but there are also a lot of internal Afghan politics here and questions about whether the power sharing is going the way it's supposed to. And so, again, that's all stuff that the U.S. and the Afghans want to bury, because otherwise the U.S. won't be able to stay in Afghanistan for the long term. But you know, that's why MSF is calling for an independent investigation. And you know, the principle, and they keep saying this, the principle of the Geneva Conventions is worth fighting for. And, you know, it's not just their dead colleagues. It's also that without that support for neutral parties on the ground, war becomes even more inhumane than it already is.
Ah, and it's hard to make a case. It could be any more inhumane. And then we see something like this, and it just goes from, inconceivable to unbelievable to enough already. And yet, you know, we have no say in that. You know, the United States saying we'll conduct our own investigation of what we did wrong is patently absurd. And if this administration is pushing that, they deserve all the ridicule they get. That's insane. I'm sorry. Just like, well, there are some over here who are criticizing the fact in the Iran deal that, you know, Iran gets to do some of their own inspections. Now, yes, we get the International Atomic Agency in there as well. But the fact that they're going to do their own inspections, we consider ludicrous. This sounds just as ludicrous as that does.
Right. And given what people who know how the IAEA works, it wouldn't be quite as independent, as Iranian alone, as the AP originally reported. And that's the point, is that you need independent fact finders on the ground. And for whatever reason, an MSF, you know, is certainly not explaining the extent of their concerns, but for whatever reason, and you know, I get that. Like the United States has a lot of pull, and they're going to be able to influence the outcome of anybody who does the investigation. The general that they have doing the investigation is not a guy who's been there. He's not a guy who, you know, who was otherwise on the fast track. So there's not a lot of reason to believe, even as an American, that it was set up to be a really strenuous investigation, especially given how hard everyone, the president, the general, the senator, are all trying to push back at the idea that there needs to be an independent investigation. I mean, that, you know, it's like, methinks they doth protest too
you
much
think?
About this independent investigation.
Yeah. And meanwhile, what? There's like 23 people dead. Right. Or thereabouts, who
including
were in a
kids.
Hospital,
including kids.
I think three children. It's really sickening. And, you know, part of me was heartened when I heard that the president had apologized. Then, of course, I just saw a tweet from attributed to Ben Carson. He said, I wouldn't apologize. But now we hear, I guess, the president didn't necessarily apologize either.
Well, he did apologize. I mean, he definitely apologized. MSF did not refute his claim to apologize.
Okay.
But on that call, he also pitched this DOD-led investigation.
Yeah, it's like self-deportation. We'll self-investigate. It'll be
right.
Fine.
I mean, you know, I think it's fairly clear that he tried to convince MSF that this DOD investigation was adequate, and they don't believe it is. General Campbell, one of the things he said when he testified was he was asked how quickly the initial results would come out. And he's like, oh, I don't want to say. They have to keep finding people to talk to. And it was Rounds from North Dakota, South Dakota, I forget, Mike Rounds. But anyway, he's like, well, 30 days. Can you give us a preliminary investigation in 30 days? And so you already see that there's this, you know, Rounds is looking for some kind of quick response, and DOD isn't even committing to that. And so, you know, the further we get from this attack, the more likely it is that people will stop paying attention to MSF's, you know, twice daily email alerts about the need for an independent investigation.
Oh boy. And so what, the only thing we know is that we don't know a whole lot. And there's a whole lot of uncertainty swirling about. We'll stay on top of it. I know you will. Marcy Wheeler, find her at emptywheel.net, on the Twitters at emptywheel. Thank you so much for being here today and for the work you do. Always appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Nicole.
And with that, another edition of the broadcast comes to a close. But never fear, we'll be back again next time. I'm Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, filling in for Brad and Desi while they enjoy a few days off. So I'll be back with you next time, too. And you can also check out my show at RadioOrNot.com anytime. If you miss any edition of the broadcast, it's all downloadable at bradblog.com or via iTunes. Until next time, good luck, world.